Today we're doing the 82nd Mizmor, which is the Shir Shel Yom of Tuesday. It's a little Mizmor, and also attributed to Asaph, the same way that the previous Mizmor was attributed to Asaph. Asaph is among the Bnei Korach, the Levi'im that sang. And this Mizmor, as many others, there have been an attempt by the modern biblical critics to determine when this was composed. And they would have liked it to have been composed at various times. Some say that it was composed in the days of Shaul. Some say it was composed in the days of Nehemiah. Just a matter of 1,200 years separation. And why they think they need to do this, of course, is all part of the whole issue of whether or not there is anything prophetic or why this would have appeared at this time and why you would be discussing this. There is a masoret in Chazal that this is somehow related to the days of Yehoshaphat. Now, for those of you that don't know who Yehoshaphat was, I was going to just give you a wee bit of historical background. Whether or not it is actually designed to describe that, the issues were brought up by that period of time. So let's go through a little bit. You know that Shaul is the first king. You know that following Shaul is David. You know that David's heir is Shlomo. And you know that after Shlomo HaMelech, the kingdom was split. So Judea now is just the tribes of Yehuda, Binyamin, and some of the Levim, you understand, nearby. And then you have the 10 tribes, and the kingdom has been split to Mamlechet Israel and Mamlechet Yehuda. In Yehuda, after Shlomo, is Rechavam, and he reigns in 928 BC, followed not long afterwards by Abiah, 911, who merely reigns another 3 years. And then came Asa, 908. And finally we get Yehoshaphat, 867 BC. You remember that we're counting down now because we're counting according to the Christian calendar. So we're talking about in the common area, before the common era. There has been a tremendous amount of corruption during this period of time. And the Tanakh tells us that Yehoshaphat, interesting that his name means Yehoshaphat, which means God is the judge, tried to clean up the judicial system. And that's why some say that whether, this is not a question of whether it was written by him, as much as it is a question of whether whoever wrote this thought about him. And that's why the Malbim takes the approach that this Mizmor was written about or during the days of Yehoshaphat. So to give you a sense of that, I brought along my Tanakh in the book, in Divrei HaYamim. In English, that's called Chronicles. Divrei HaYamim Bet, the second one. In the 19th chapter, we hear, I just want to give you a sense a little bit about what might have gone on, and you'll understand that really nothing has changed, for better and unfortunately for worse. And what we're told is after a major war, Vayashav Yehoshaphat Melech Yehuda al Beito b'Shalom Yerushalayim, Yehoshaphat came back to his house, settled in the palace after a major war. And what he did at that point was, בירושלים העמיד יהושפט מן הלוויים והכהנים ומראשי האבות לישראל למשפט השם to re-establish the kingdom. He went and brought back the Levi'im, he brought back the Kohanim and the heads, ראשי אבות, the elders of Israel, and he brought them there to re-establish the Sanhedrin. ויצב עליהם, and he commanded them לעשות, למור, Kota sun biyirat Hashem. What you do when you're holding a judgment, you must do this with a fear of God. Be'emunah, with faithfulness. U'belevav shalem, with a full heart. V'chol riv asher yavo aleichem, and any dispute or quarrel that comes before you to be settled, when it's from your brothers, Be'arehem, Bein Dam Ledam, because he sent out a what we call a circuit court system that went out among the people. You need to deal with whether you're dealing Bein Dam Ledam, Bein Torah LeMitzvah, LeChukim ULeMishpatim. Sometimes they needed to judge, which a Rav does today, about blood. Is it Dam Nida? Is it not Dam Nida? That would have been... Is this Tohor? Is this Tomei? This would have been dealt with by the Kohanim, you understand? But the Shoftim had to deal with disputes in civil law, torts, complaints. The Kohanim, the Levim, may have dealt with religious law. Is it kosher? Is it not kosher? Is it Mutar on Shabbos? Is it not Mutar on Shabbos? But the regular Shoftim had to deal primarily with disputes amongst people. And he tells them, whatever you do, make sure you don't bring guilt upon yourself. You must be honest and treat all people equally. He wanted to reestablish this. That's why the Malbim tells us that he wanted to reestablish judges and ensure that there was a circuit, judges in every township to deal with the local issues. Kohanim and Leviim would be able to answer ritual questions. And he reestablished this after a major issue. And therefore, he places it at that point. What is important is what's going on here. What goes on here, particularly since we'll be Yemei Hadin, we're here as follows. Mizmor le'asaf. Elokim nitzav be'adat kel. Bekerev Elokim ishbot. Now, this first statement is quoted frequently by the power that was given to the Beis Din. Remember that a Beis Din can't really determine the truth because they're human beings, and they're human beings that have to use human perception. They are, however, given rules of evidence, and they have to follow the rules of evidence that were established by the Torah. So, for example, no matter how much circumstantial evidence there can never be a ruling in Torah law in a capital case, except if we have two independent eyewitnesses. The power of the judges sometimes might be to be able to imprison somebody because if they have enough evidence to indicate that he is a danger to the community, but not to execute an individual unless we have independently confirmed. Independent means that those two witnesses have to be kosher witnesses, that they've never had any aspersion of their credibility. They are asked a bunch of questions. If they contradict, and by the way, they don't hear each other, okay, when they're giving testimony so that they can't so that they don't try to align their cases. They're asked all the questions of the W's, who, what, where, when, how, what was he wearing, but, and if there's any contradiction on anything, there's no execution of any kind. Hence, it was very rare that anybody was ever executed. But the crucial issue is that God stands be'adat kel. The Ribbono Shel'Olam is present in the assembly of God, and the assembly of God is a Beit Mishpat. It was seen as a place in which they were empowered by the Ribbono Shel'Olam, and the Shechina would be with them at that time, and they have to recognize this. Therefore, the Medrash reads us as follows. Judges should not say, Anu yoshvim la'atzmeinu badin, we're sitting here alone and we have to cast the judgment. Ela amar kadosh baruch hu ladayanim, God said, declared to the judges, Hevu yodim ki imachem ani yoshev, I want you to know that I'm sitting here with you. Shene'emar, as it is written in the book of Isaiah, Ani Hashem ohev mishpat. I am Hashem, I love justice. Ve'im heteitem et hadin, oti atem matim. And if you twist and pervert the justice, you are perverting and twisting me, says the Ribbono Shel Olam. Furthermore, in the prophet Malachi, it continues, Kerafti elechem lemishpat. I came close to you during the time of your judgment. There is an implication here that the Ribbono Shel Olam provides special siyata dishmaya to appropriate judges. But more importantly, that while they are casting judgment, God is sitting in judgment of them. So that they are going to be held accountable to him for any perversion, for any twisting, for any preference they're giving to one side as opposed to another side. The Rebbeinu Shlalom is there both to help the process of judgment and be to hold the judges accountable. That is the way we look at this. But the point is, who then are the judges? In one of the most important articles that I happen to find, Adat Kel, the assembly of God, refers not only to the Beis Din, to the Sanhedrin, to the even a judgment of three judges or one. No. It is in fact us as a assembly of God, God's assembly. We need to be recognizing, one of the most important things is, that throughout our history of destruction, of rebuilding, and then destruction again, and persecution, and decay and corruption, and whatever it is that occurs both as a nation and universally as humanity, the Rebbeinu Shlalom is here. The forces of history are not blind. The forces of history have within them the power of God who created it. And why then is this read on the third day? Because it was on the third day that the Rebbeinu Shlalom separated, if you remember, Yikavu Hamayim, the waters and the earth appeared. Now, I want you to understand Kabbalistically what that imagery means. Water, of course, is a vital thing for life. Without it, there is no life. But earth was the place where those that breathe air were put. Now, the seas and the water, once they were separated, and out of the seas came what we know today as the continents, and then they separated. You know, there was like one big piece of land, and then it all dispersed and separated. The Rebbeinu Shlalom made possible life forms that we have today, whether it's vegetation, and later on, all of the animals and the bugs and human beings who need air. Now, there are plant life that live in the water. And there is animal life that lives in the water. And they have special gills and so on that they can take in any oxygen that they need, you understand, through the water. Because, of course, you know that in water there is also oxygen, H2O. But the rest of us could not. The seas that represent this force of life and fecundity and fertility are also a place in which chaos rules. Chaos in the sense, not that it is a mess, there's laws of nature that the Rebbeinu Shlalom implanted. But those laws are amoral. They have no rachmonis. They have no mercy. They have no consideration. You see, morality is about good and evil. Natural law doesn't know good or evil. Natural law knows the laws of physics. And the biological laws that Darwin found, which were that the most powerful survive, and the big eat the little. That's the law of the seas. The small survive, not because the big ones have mercy on them, but because the smaller they are, the more they reproduce. You remember the Yod, since you said on Rosh Hashanah, that we may be fruitful like the fish. Fish produce lots and lots and lots and lots of eggs, and the smaller they are, the more they reproduce. The bigger they are, the fewer they make. So the big fish, right, including the mammals that are in the sea, produce one or two a year. And their period of gestation is much, much longer. The smaller they are, plankton, all over the place. It's like they're all over the place, enough to be able to feed. So the smaller they are, they survive purely by numbers as opposed to force. That's the only thing that balances this out. Otherwise, if the big would swallow all the little would go extinct, and the big would have nothing to eat, and they would die as well. The world has a balance there. But it is blind to kindness. There is no kindness. It is a silent world. It has a beauty to it. But it is the world of the survival of the fittest. And there's no room for any kind of other moral considerations. When the Ribono Shel'Olam established earth, on earth there was going to be a rain, a possibility of rain of Yud-Kei Vav-Kei. He prepared the groundwork for where the Shekhinah could come down and infuse beings that also could represent mercy and chesed. A loving kindness that gives, expecting nothing in return. An ability to take care of the weak and not just let them die out. When the earth became corrupted, you remember, of course, in the days of Noah, it was because of Hamas. Hamas was the kind of violence, not necessarily open gunshot violence. It was small little violations, violence, you see, in which what happened? We stole from each other. We cheated one another. We did what we could that we could get away with. And we're told that Bnei Elohim lakhu et bnot ta'adam. Notice they're called the sons of the gods because the powerful became godlike. And they could take women from whoever they wanted. So there was stealing of property. There was stealing of people's bodies. Women became things that you could take, and there was no respect for any sanctity of any human being. The big could use the others. They could enslave others. Vatishachet ha'aretz, and the earth was corrupted. And when the earth was corrupted and was no different than the seas, the line that had been drawn that did not allow the seas to take over the earth again were let go. The dam was broken and the waters took over and drowned the earth. You understand? Okay. So the laws of nature took over moral law. And as long as there was moral law, what does the sea try to do? The sea tries to crash against the earth, right? Constantly hitting against the shoreline. And what does the Ribono Shel'Olam do? It goes only so far and then the tides pull back. But what happens if the tides won't pull back? Well, of course, after the flood, the Ribono Shel'Olam promised that it would never happen again. But we see it happening in small places. A hurricane there, a tsunami there. And you'll sometimes hear how in a tsunami in Indonesia, the animals recognized it and went to high ground and the people did not. They sensed something was coming. An earthquake coming out of the sea brings the big ocean to swallow up the sea. And when it does, it doesn't recognize the weak or the strong. It makes no difference between the righteous and the guilty. It swallows it all. Chaos reigns, you understand? And then we start all over again. 10 generations from Adam to Noah. 10 generations from Noah to Babel. 10 generations from Babel to Avraham Avinu, who brought again chesed to this world. Because this world can only survive on chesed. But it's a justice that is tempered with kindness. And that was the role of the Shofet. Where that reigns, Elokim nitzav be'adat kelo. When people see themselves as under the law of God, when this country once saw itself as one nation under God, they saw themselves as empowered and responsible to a higher authority. In fact, the very beginning of the Declaration of Independence is what? We hold these truths to be self. We don't need to prove it scientifically. Those are the axioms by which we operate. That all human beings were created equal. Even if they were holding slaves at the time, they still declared it. You understand? That was the premise. And we're endowed by their creator, so that the human being is already endowed by virtue of his birth, nothing more than that, with a sanctity. That makes this, the Chofetz Chaim called the America, Mindinas Chesed. It makes this an Adat Kel. So some say this is not only about the judges, it's not only about Am Yisrael, it's about a world that would live with the Sheva Mitzvot Bnei Noach and would recognize that there is an accountability to a God. And as a result, Bekerev Elokim Yishpot. And the question is, Bekerev Mi Elokim Yishpot. Who is Yoshofet? Who is Yishpot? Bekerev, in the midst of, in the middle of, God is judging, or is in the midst of us is the power, the divine ability, the intelligence to cast judgment, because we were created b'chelek elokah mimal. Not only is the Ribbono Shel Olam present when an assembly of judges sits, but every human being has within him the capacity to make mishpat. And in fact, we do. And our ability to make judgments is because we were given both reason and the ability to empathize and to consider what circumstances might have been and to temper our judgment with a measure of mercy. We can do so. So the question is, who is it that is standing and where? Rashi tells us as follows. Adat Kel, he follows the Shita, are the Dayanim and the Shoftim. And God is standing there to see if they will judge righteously, correctly. Sfono says to help them and give them special Seata Dishmaya, so that they can judge righteously and justly. But Bekerev Elokim Yishpot, Elokim in this case, according to Radak and Sfono, is not Hashem, but is the term used for Shoftim. You will see that in the Tanakh, in the Torah, in the Nevi'im, in the Ketuvim, Elokim or Elohim is used to mean sometimes the powerful people, and sometimes it's a term for the judges, the court. You stand before God, in a sense. You understand? And why? Says Sfono and Radak. The second half of the verse is not saying the same thing. It's saying God stands in the assembly of the judges, and amongst them, he will judge the judges. He stands there to help them, but he also standing there to hold them accountable for what they're doing. And if they don't do what is necessary, he will punish them when others can't. However, what does God say to them? Ad matai tishbetu avel, ufnei rishaim tisu sela. How long, till when, will you continue to pervert judgment? And how long will you lift the faces of Rishoyim? Lifting the faces is an indication of showing preference, the best judgment that money can buy. The FBI and its determinations of who should or should not be indicted and whether it's indictable. You understand? Something for everybody else that's sitting in prison is now written off. Mm-hmm. right, and gives immunity to whoever. That's Pnei Reshaim Tisal. But there's another reason about the lifting of the face, and I want to talk about that for just 1 second. We've done this in the past, I believe. In the language of the Tanakh, you have lots of faces. You see, the word for faces in Hebrew is always plural, panim. It's because we have many facets, many faces. My sad face, my happy face, my sad face. You understand? We make faces. When it says your face is fallen, it's a gesture that indicates or should indicate an emotion. It can indicate shame or sorrow. You understand? When you are chin up, face up, is to make them smile. It's to lift them up above the others. It's to make them proud. Lift your face. You understand? So that gesture indicates favoritism. Bestowing favors, making them smile. Do you understand? How long will you do this? And God is admonishing the judges. Shiftu dal ve'yatom. Your role not only as when somebody comes to you for a dispute, but your role in as people empowered is to go out and seek justice for the poor, for the orphans who have no defenders and can't buy good lawyers. Ani v'rash hatzdiku. Go and find ways to justify, to find the right for the poor, for the impoverished. You see, it's not enough for them just to sit there and wait for the judgment to come there. They need to go proactively and look at the issues of what happens when somebody is so desperate for a job that he'll work for any wage and then not be paid, and he has no choice because he still needs the job, and so his pay will be postponed and he doesn't dare quit. Paltu dal ve'evyon. Liflot is to take out from, find refuge for. These are people now who sometimes have been sold into slavery, either literal or figurative slavery. Paltu dal ve'evyon, miyad reshaim hatzilu. Save them from the hands of the reshaim, who, because of their wealth. Now, that doesn't mean that everybody who's wealthy is a roshe. But power so easily corrupts. Where, and that power can be who you know, what lands you own, what influence you can buy. And they can do what? They have the power over the dal and the evyon. That was their charge. Unfortunately, lo yad'u ve'lo yavinu. They neither knew, they didn't understand. Who didn't know? Who didn't understand? B'chashecha yitalechu, they walk in the darkness. The judges didn't know that that was their job? Or they didn't understand that it was their job? Or the people that appointed them didn't know that that was their job? Or we, who are also judges, didn't know that that was our responsibility. And not knowing that that was our responsibility, v'chashecha yitalechu. Explain, Rashi, Radak, and Ibn Ezra, that the reason they walk in the darkness is because the Torah says that they're bought and paid for. V'hashochad yaver enei chachamim. And bribery blinds the eyes of the wise. Hence they walk in the darkness. Sforno says, no, that's the punishment. They are doomed to be in forever darkness. They will be damned to eternal darkness, into hell. And as a result, Yimotu kol mosdei aretz, all the foundations of the earth collapse. Explains Rabbi Shimshon Raphael Hirsch that trust in government and social conventions is vital for a civilization to survive. And when that trust is gone, societies disintegrate. A word doesn't mean a word. Promises, you laugh cynically at them because we know that they are not going to be kept. They mean nothing. The best that we can do is, who can I bribe now? Who's in his elections, right? Spread your money amongst both parties just in case you don't know who you might need. In fact, what we've got is the corruption we paid for, and that's exactly what we're all doing. And that corruption that is at the top begins at, you know, at the very bottom and goes through the entire society. And as a result, societies collapse and the worst comes out. Rabbi Shimshon Raphael here says that it is not just people in power that don't understand what their responsibility is and how great their the duty that is, the burden that's placed on their shoulders. He says people think that this is only those at the very top. All of us are in positions of this kind, whether you're serving on a board, whether you serve in an administration. I don't care if it's a board of a condo board, whether it's a board of an organization, of your shul, of a school. These people are constantly making judgments. And when they do not recognize what they've been empowered for and what responsibility comes from, they are going to be held accountable in ways they hadn't even dreamed of. And they can't say, but it wasn't my idea. Because all it takes for evil to flourish is for good people, right, Santayana, to sit around and do nothing. What could I do? What could I do? Says Rabbi Shimshon Raphael Hirsch, the role of judges is similar to God's who created the world, and they're partners with him in sustaining this world. And each of us in our own little tiny spheres, the same is true. And the ability of the individual to cast judgment comes by virtue of the fact that he was given a mind, a God-derived mind, chalek elokam imal, a neshama, the ability to reason and to feel. And when he betrays the trust that was given to him, he has failed and will be held accountable for not using the ability to judge appropriately, properly. And as a result, that is the way civilizations collapse. Ani amalti, I said, who's speaking? According to all of the Mefarshim, the speaker is none other than God himself. Because as long as Elohim is singular, it might refer to God. But when it says Atem, it can't be God. Now I can read this in a variety of ways. Elohim Atem? You're gods? Uvnei Elyon Kulchem? And you're the children of the One on High, all of you? See, I can read that sarcastically. To which I then respond, Achen, ke Adam tamutu. No, 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 you're no Elohim. You will die just like any human being will. You think you're all powerful. You think you'll live forever. You will die. And no different than any prince you might have known. You too shall fall. You too shall fall. That is if I read it sarcastically. Rabbi Shimshon Raphael Hirsch doesn't want to read it sarcastically. He wants to read it as a charge. That's why I told you. As I am God of the universe, you are the ones that are empowered to sustain this place here. Elohim atem.
Uvnei Elyon Kulchem. And you're all the children of the One on High. You were all given intelligence. You were all given the ability to discern right from wrong. And indeed, unlike God, you will die. And like even the princes, who may be awfully powerful in the end, what do? They fall. And therefore, you will then be held accountable, if not in this world, then in the next. Comes the next line. Most of the Rishonim argue that the next line is called out not by God, but by my poet, Asaf. Kuma Elokim, rise up, God. Shafta ha'aretz, judge the world. Ki ata tinchal bechol ha'goyim. For only you can determine the inheritance of all goyim. Only the Ribon Shel Olam can restore justice and determine who gets what, not only among the Jews, but among all nations. And therefore, your author has apparently given up on the ability of human judges to ever bring tzedek, and asks God to rise up. But I found an article by Dr. Yerachmiel Bergman. Now, by the way, why would they say that this is God? Because I told you that Kuma Elokim Shafta, the singular, you see? And therefore it must refer to Hashem, where earlier Elohim Atem. But he argues that there's perhaps an additional approach. Kuma Elokim is the same Ani Amarti, and it is God who turns to us and calls out into the divinity inside us with the power that we were given. Kuma, rise up. Why then in the singular? B'makom she'en ish, ishtadel liot ish. Where there are no men, you be one. Kuma, rise up, Elokim. You were created b'chelek elokam imal. Stop just taking it. Stop just saying, but what can I do? Shafta ha'aretz, judge this earth, judge this land. He argues that it's not merely the individual. Kuma Elokim is Am Yisrael. Rise up, Am Yisrael. Judge this earth, and judge it how? Shiftu dal v'yaton. Take care of the poor, the orphan, the powerless. Go after justice for those who can't buy it. You as a kahila, you as a datke, I can speak to you as singular. I ask you, rise up and do what you were supposed to do. Judge this earth. For you will inherit. Ata tinchal, you will be able to settle amongst all the goyim. You can divide this earth and make it a place where all humanity can live. That's your job as all lagoyim, as a light unto the nations. So this is appropriate on the individual level. It's appropriate on the collective level. It's addressed also to those that are in official positions, but it's just as much announced to those of us who are not in official positions. Just little old me has to exercise the judgment. And when you see something wrong, you've got to speak up. Somebody has to speak up. Because if you don't speak up, then shtika kehoda'a, the silence is assent. It's as if you gave your full approval to the injustices to the perversions of judgment being carried out in your name.